You're listening to Inside Content, the TV industry podcast. This show is brought to you by 3Vision, a global TV industry consultancy specializing in content acquisition, strategy, research, and business development. Each episode, we give you VIP access to the views and experiences of senior TV executives and discuss the latest TV industry trends and insights.
Hi there. I'm Jack Davison, EVP at 3Vision, and on this special episode of Inside Content, I'm joined by our CEO, Toby Russell, and analyst, Jed Ailoff. We'll be taking you through the key findings of our latest TV industry trends report, diving into the main changes affecting the industry today, including what we can expect from Q2 and beyond this year, and how different businesses operating across the ecosystem can ride the wave of change. The TV and streaming industry, like almost all industries, has seen significant turbulence in the last 12 months. The landscape has undergone rapid changes and there are numerous issues and challenges in the market. Fiscal restraint of media companies, cost cutting and a focus on profitability have been standout themes as businesses are responding to increased challenges and competition. There are clear economic challenges and with that, considerable uncertainty around content spend and production across the whole ecosystem. However, there's still unrelenting competition, and with that comes an ongoing demand for content, leading everybody in 2024 to be working out how they can navigate the changing landscape and make sure they stay ahead.
Hello, everybody. I'm Toby Russell, CEO of 3Vision. I'm joined by Jack, who you've just heard from, and Jed Ailoff, also from our team. So every year we run this survey where we ask our network their views on the most important industry trends, and we combine this valuable input with our own analysis. In the next 30 minutes, we're going to be taking you through the results of this work. So I'll hand over to Jack now, who will take you through the first section of the presentation.
Thanks, Toby. The survey, as Toby says, it's about 7 years old now. It goes out to stakeholders across the industry. Everything from distributors, operators, producers, technology companies with pretty good geographic spread. The findings are, well, the findings and the topics we target, you can broadly group them up to kind of 9 overlapping areas. And the year's certainly been a year where the industry has had to navigate a lot of issues, a huge number of which were actually probably out of their control, with some pretty kind of regular themes around austerity, cost control and profitability. And in these difficult economic times, it seems that not just the fiscal restraint of media companies is influencing the thinking of people who come back to us in this survey, but there's also a kind of underlying theme of value for money as well in most responses. We can't cover everything, but following on from previous years, we've continued to look at production volumes, spend, streamer activity, SVOD, AVOD fast, free and pay TV development, and studio behavior in a number of different ways. The first and most kind of, well, slightly more depressing themes, but undoubtedly one of the biggest themes is the drop in the level of productions and production spend. There was fiscal tightening across the economy, whatever industry you're in, really. US media companies cutting costs, a historic year for strikes, and the implications on the production industries are understandably very significant. And kind of scripted and unscripted TV in the US fell about 20%, broadcast suffering a bit more. Most notably there is the kind of the red negative SVOD finally showing kind of a full number. But it's not just the US, the UK's exposed very much, certainly exposed to the US with UK spend on high-end TV down 33% in the year. Most of that, in fact, in terms of fall, was the inward investment, which is foreign money coming into the UK. And that was a key theme that we had to ask people about.
So, Jack, do you think are these falls mainly caused by the 2 strikes that happened last year?
I think probably the numbers and the jury is slightly out on that. But you can see in the US, I think the fact that broadcast TV fell 36%, kind of the smart money and commentators would put most of that down to strike-induced production delays, the broadcast fall. And the UK kind of high-end TV collapse is probably kind of, well, almost definitely due to the collapse in the co-productions and productions from the US market, which is such a huge part of that number. I would say that strikes have a big role to play, but probably aggressive cost management in the face of kind of the difficult conditions that the media company was facing. I mean, there was plenty of companies, I think, almost using the strike as an opportunity to cut their costs even more.
Right, yeah.
And those impacts from the ad market as well. We did, so just the first, I guess, the first view of the respondents kind of asking the level of productions, where they see that's going to go. We've asked that kind of every year since 2017, and only 15% were outright positive about production levels returning to growth. 45% felt that levels will fall further and never return to previous levels. 37% feel things will improve but never reach previous highs. As we've been asking it since 2017, and that big kind of growth in the 46% saying that that is more of a fall to come in production levels. And with that, kind of the second question related to that was the spend, and it was in terms of spend, not just the actual production numbers. Only 19% of the respondents remained kind of fully optimistic in terms of believing that we kind of, with increased competition, companies will invest more money into their content production. I guess this question is sort of asked from a negative, from the back foot. So maybe that encourages it. But I guess I can kind of back at you, I guess, Toby. The thing I find interesting is the year or so before this survey, I think John Landgraf came up with the peak TV phase and has quite often commentated of the burst that was to come. I mean, I guess the question is, are we seeing the end of peak TV now?
I think we finally might be, yeah. I mean, it's been called a few times, but I think now it does look like it. I think the levels will be not at the absolute sort of historical high, but, and they, you know, if you looked at trends over multiple years, then, you know, sure, it's going to be higher, but I think we are down from the peak. We're going to be down from the peak. Who knows what might happen in the future, but I think, you know, it's not going to hit those levels in the short term.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, unquestionably, smarter spend is sort of one of the words of the future that I've had used to me. But moving on, to talk a bit about the streamers and the prospects for streamers. I mean, the context of this is pretty clear. Probably loads of different charts I could have put up. We talk a lot about the studios and D2C, but studios are laser focused on that investor demand that D2C becomes profitable. That there's been a huge amount of pressure on them to deliver results there and to get a handle on their and control on their costs. And the overall kind of impact on cost is clear. I mean, this does kind of bump up and down from different commentators, but everyone is pretty clear that kind of it's been a tough year. But and kind of in positive terms, kind of the conversation is dominated by Netflix. They grew to over 260 million subs. Kind of lots of people use that as an opportunity to declare they've won the streaming wars. Over the last few years, a lot of the streamers have actually achieved reasonable growth. Everyone's quite very pessimistic about things at the moment and talking very much about how the studios need to achieve scale to make their kind of great D2C initiatives kind of work. And they have grown quite well, but I guess the view is that they haven't necessarily scaled enough. It should really probably add Disney number with the Hulu number to be fair. And in doing that, Disney's lead over the others would be almost double the nearest. But nonetheless, we asked respondents and the majority of them agree with that industry narrative at the close of the year, kind of that Netflix is winning the streaming war. It continues to be ranked the best in terms of growth prospects by respondents. When weighting it across all responses, Netflix scores the highest ranking of 3.22. That follows on from last year, and 27% of respondents chose Netflix as the number one streamer for growth potential. But it wasn't everybody. So even though they're the biggest, there's quite a lot of respondents who were selecting others. But compared to last year, Netflix and Prime maintain their positions. Disney actually saw a bit of a drop. I mean, they actually were up at number one ranking in 2022, and now they're down at sort of, well, I guess fourth equal. Really, kind of there's not much room between kind of third and seventh, really. They're all pretty close. And I guess the big question on everyone's lips and the big activity as well that's going on is talk of consolidation, both between companies and both by journalists and commentators. We'll see, no doubt, see a lot of turbulence in the sector. And we asked people just views on three statements on this, and looking at those, kind of 88% feel it's inevitable there will be some form of consolidation. 77% feel it may happen, but not on a corporate level, kind of probably reflecting the challenges it makes to completely for further US media consolidation. And 76% believe that some streamers will not survive in the current climate and eventually, the back out and eventually close. I mean, I guess, Toby, what kind of, you're just back, aren't you, from the States? What do you feel? Do you think there's going to be more consolidation?
I will get out my crystal ball, Jack, and have a think about this. Everybody seems to think that that is the case. I mean, I think it might take, it might well take a while because, you know, there's, depending on the parties that you're looking at, there is, complexity around, getting regulatory approval. If anybody who's, starts trying to do a big deal that's going to be in the US, today is going to be, facing a kind of uncertain, regulatory kind of framework in terms of there being an election this year. So you don't, you might enter into a deal and you don't know, what the political climate is going to be like when you come to actually try and get that approved. So, that's another factor to consider. And it may mean that things don't happen as quickly as some commentators maybe expect. And, there's also, scenarios where, it's not necessarily consolidation happening. So some of the scenarios people have been talking about with Paramount, potentially the business gets broken up into a studio business and then another business with streaming and the networks in there, or even more of a breakup. So, there might be some fragmentation going on as well as, as well as consolidation.
Yeah. Moving on to kind of SVOD and kind of development areas, which is something we always ask about and we're keen to hear about. Many of the platforms, actually both local and global, innovated quite a lot last year with pricing propositions, with ad tiers, with password sharing and other areas. And 2024 will only see kind of even more intense competition. And with that, kind of the need to innovate even more and not stand still. So we asked them about a bunch of different features. 85% felt bundled offers with local operators were of high importance. 80% viewed lower price ad supported tiers as the key factors. That's up quite a bit from 69% last year, which is probably very unsurprising to all. Recommendations through kind of human curation marginally beat AI, but whether it's kind of medium high, very high, it's pretty close. But interesting, I think, given the hype around AI. And the other two more technical side of things received a fairly limited response, 4K and UHD.
Are you surprised by any of these?
Not really. As we sort of said at the top, I think that theme of money saving initiatives, which sort of comes with the first two, I think it's fair to say it's implicit with the kind of the bundled offering side of things. So I'm not really that surprised. I think there maybe kind of the. The fact that kind of human curation comes up is a good thing. We know from all the kind of clients we talk to who are running services that, yes, kind of data is critical, and they're all doing a lot with kind of machine learning and recommendation engines, and they have been for years, to be honest. So, despite the recent AI hype, but we know that also the importance of kind of some level of human curation is there as well. But I'm a little surprised, maybe it kind of isn't. Slightly, people haven't lent a bit more towards the machine learning side of things, but maybe that's the softer side of our respondents. I don't know. We went a bit deeper with the bundling side of things because SVOD bundling can mean a lot of different things to a lot of people. There was some very new types of SVOD partnerships that were kind of key area of the year. That cut across the need for studios to find scale and profitability with their D2C initiatives. And the SVODs kind of need to integrate with local distribution partners in deeper ways. They've been more innovative. We asked the surveys about kind of which ones kind of there. I mean, we could go even deeper than this, but it's complicated in the survey. And 82% felt that bundling with SVOD services was of high importance. 60% felt kind of fully bundled offers with video and comm service providers was also of high importance. Perhaps kind of reflecting that kind of customer retention need and the different stages of development of S4. But it all starts to decline as we start talking about introductory offers, which was a big feature over the last 10 years, really.
Any surprises there, Jack?
Not in my mind. I think maybe one. I mean, the free short-term offers, I think we know for some time, a lot of people have been questioning the value of those. They still have their purpose and their need, kind of very marketing-driven partnerships, and they can achieve lots of things when it comes to early awareness, but they don't necessarily give the better quality sub, which I think people also recognize. Maybe that, I'm not quite sure how, maybe we need to be a bit clear about that question, bundling with other S4 services. That's the one that maybe I'm not so sure about. S4 to S4 bundles are interesting, perhaps more influenced by the US there, but my kind of feeling is that this is all linked to the need for someone else to play that aggregator role and offer value. And it's probably the comms players and the pay TV operators that are better placed to do that in that situation. So next subject is AVOD and FAST. There is so much to talk about in terms of AVOD. It really kind of dominated discussions in 2023, not least because it kind of links to the SVOD advertiser tiers, it links to AVOD activity, it links to FAST activity. But 2 to 3 years ago, really, studios weren't really talking to them with a focus on SVOD. Now they're welcomed. It's changed kind of massively from YouTube and early efforts in Central Eastern Europe and Asia to broadcast the catch up to social VOD to the specialist kind of we have today. And now you've got more enhanced BVOD services from the broadcasters. You've got the CE manufacturers like Samsung, LG and Vizio. All this kind of has been happening. And the types of content, the types of content engagement changing and the emergence of FAST. And kind of I think it's really important to just keep in the context of the overall kind of ecosystem. And that's kind of why we always asked about kind of the more general, broader opportunity. And this year, kind of again, they ranked kind of specialist AVOD service providers pretty highly as number one opportunity ahead of social media, FAST channels and BVOD. But kind of actually, it's a little bit of a mixed area, this, because kind of obviously AVOD specialists are involved in the FAST ecosystem as well. So it's a bit of a tricky one. I think it all kind of reflects kind of the multiplicity of these services in the mixed economy. But I think it's important that kind of social media remains a huge part of the AVOD ecosystem, and kind of 34% ranked that as the number one opportunity. And I think FAST probably, it's up there. I think it featured in the AVOD specialist numbers as well. And we'll move on to talk about FAST specifically. In fact, I've got Jed with me here, and I'm going to hand over to him to talk through the FAST responses.
Yeah, so we've been tracking the FAST market quite extensively now for quite a while through our FAST tracker. And we've noticed some interesting trends. With the US largely leading the way, we have also started to see the market mature, with other sort of key growth markets looking to learn from their development. So throughout 2023, we have seen three key developments that we will sort of follow closely throughout 2024. And that includes sort of channel growth is calming now. Major media players are joining and entering the market in a bigger way. And as the sort of quality improves, channels are being dropped off services, and we're seeing sort of higher sort of churn rates because of that. And this can be shown by analyzing who exactly has been launching channels recently. So in the US, much of the activity in FAST has been driven by the major broadcasters and studios who have ramped up their involvement in FAST considerably over the last year. And this further emphasizes the sort of improvement in quality and the sort of inevitable marginalization of less premium content. You can see on the other side of this that there's significant activity from the FAST service providers who are continuing to launch their own O&O channels. Looking specifically at what our respondents believed are currently the best strategies and what is sort of important to them, you can see a lot of sort of partnering with platforms comes there. So, with that, there are lots of different ways that you can monetize content. You can do it directly through your own channels, licensing to sort of O&O channels, or also licensing to sort of third-party aggregators. You can see with the sort of the people that we surveyed that almost 50% of respondents ranked partnering with platforms as the number one opportunity for revenue in the market. This is likely due to the control they have over the UI and sort of dictating prominence and positioning on the channels on EPGs. But the results also may reflect that the challenges that are starting to emerge for the distribution of third-party channels as well, as the market has become much more sort of competitive as these major players have sort of continued to launch channels and platforms look to sort of consolidate and channels churn off the services. So that's just an interesting sort of trend that we've seen reflected in survey results as well. But moving on to the sort of content side of things, there are sort of three main categories of FAST channels. You know, you have your single IP channels, your single genre slash sort of thematic channels, and then finally looking at sort of mixed genre channels as well. You know, even from the early days of FAST, it was clear that there was a place for these single IP channels and single genre thematic channels, with both these categories, you know, scoring very highly and as sort of opportunities in the market. This is emphasizing the sort of the importance of discoverability in FAST and sort of the channel's need to present a clear proposition for audiences. You know, respondents' views on mixed genre, however, sort of remains sort of unclear. You know, half of respondents were either low or very low in terms of what they think of mixed genre channels being an investment area. And actually, Jack, I wonder if you have any opinions on the sort of prospects of multi-genre channels sort of going forward.
I mean, it's quite a tough one, that, because I think I know I'm not alone, like with the single IP channels and some of the FAST channels that have done really well, it's that kind of clarity of proposition, kind of the in what is a noisy environment for channels and for content, having that really clear proposition has clearly worked quite well for single IP channels and single genre channels. And so kind of the corollary of that is, therefore, it's probably harder for the mixed channels who are new to the market kind of to break in and to get kind of people to be aware of what they're doing. Doesn't mean that it's not, they still can't do it. Obviously, if a channel's got a nice, clear brand and proposition and can be understood, it'll cut through, especially if it's got some sort of support, some sort of promotion and positioning that helps it. I think maybe it's a stage of development issue. I think maybe they'll start cutting through, but I think it's clearly a bit easier perceived to be maybe a bit easier with the other ones at the moment.
We've got a question, maybe you know, Jed and Jack, you can answer. It's, will OEMs launch more O&O channels?
So I believe it's sort of the OEMs, it's quite clear the sort of success they've had on FAST and sort of how sort of prominent they are in the FAST space specifically. And I also, our sort of data is showing that this idea of them sort of launching more channels, more O&O channels, partnering more with sort of content providers, means that this probably is a trend that's going to continue. We've seen a lot of them sort of build out their O&O offering quite consistently over the last sort of six to nine months. So yeah, I'd still say that's an opportunity there, definitely.
Yeah, I would say they're going to do more, but it doesn't mean that they'll grow to have maybe a huge volume. I think it remains to be seen how many they think is the right number, but I think they've got all the data, they're going to be experimenting, there's certainly going to be more activity there, definitely.
Yeah, so moving on to this sort of this part, which is, you know, we've seen sort of obviously the strong growth in the US, you know, it's been sort of a very sort of key sort of theme with this, but it is like to show a different pattern in the rest of the world and sort of properly understanding the relative merits of different services and how they compare in different markets is complicated, especially given the sort of varied nature of sort of global markets and the different sort of powers in them. You know, with that being said, you know, you can see it, Samsung TV Plus came out on top this year as the FAST service with the best prospects outside of the US. But, you know, you're also the others sort of feature strongly with the likes of Freevee and Roku and Pluto and LG sort of all sort of having at least 10% of the votes. So there are a lot of sort of, again, the prospects here are sort of strong across a lot of these platforms. But yes, that Samsung's definitely sort of leading the pack in terms of outside of the US. With 2024, it will prove to be like sort of a telling year, especially for how FAST develops globally and with many markets still like sort of nascent in terms of sort of development and market maturity. It'll be interesting to sort of follow that. But yeah, I'll hand over back to Jack, who can sort of go through some insights from the free TV and sort of pay TV space.
Thanks, Jed. I think next year it's going to be interesting. I think next year we might be even able, if we don't do it ourselves, maybe the industry might have tidied up the languages and the ways we talk about FAST and free TV and what and FOSTA, because there is it needs a bit more clarity. I think it's moved on now, but we did ask about free TV innovation. Everything was deemed to be of some importance by people, with content unsurprisingly kind of key, and featuring in the top kind of two. The premiering of content and digital services featuring kind of the highest, 71%. Exclusive digital content followed right behind at 59%. Addition of kind of ad supported tiers, a subscription tier without ads, sorry, the other way around, got pretty strong support. And then the others kind of lower down the list, but they did score positively. Kind of subscription services with a different set of content scored probably the lowest, which rings true really when you see what's happening with everybody. I think one of the things we don't get the opportunity to with all of the with our survey is drill into kind of local activity. And we talk about the streamers when you're really talking about the global ones at the start, because the local streamers play such an important part in each ecosystem. And I think that's sort of reflected here, because it is the local content that is the thing that dominates and the thing that gives them their key strength. And that's what I guess the respondents are saying here. We did ask them about FAST, because we saw quite a lot of major broadcasters launch FAST initiatives. We saw ITV launching, we saw Seven in Australia launching, we saw kind of Shahid in the Middle East, and they have a pretty, actually some mixed views on how they will be involved. Majority not marking kind of anything as very high in terms of importance, perhaps reflecting the other things we just talked about being more of an issue for them. So it's going to be interesting to see how they do it, because a lot of the FAST activity is obviously just a very simple natural extension of what they're doing, and whether they kind of put their existing channels on a FAST channel as on a FAST service as we're seeing now, or they launch and light up new kind of FAST services, which on either their own digital platform or elsewhere, we're going to see a lot more. And we'll move on now. And in the interest of time, I'll keep going. Kind of pay TV investments areas, again, we asked them, and perhaps, as I said at the top, reflecting that ongoing cost of living crisis, kind of the pricing proposition hit the top. That sort of mirrors those concerns of SVOD as well. And respondents seem to be pretty aligned that pricing proposition is the key. 87% viewing is important, not very important. We see kind of more and more services like SVODs adding ad tiers and looking to be more competitive in their marketplace. So pay TV is also going to be looking at that at the corner of their eyes. Improving the user experience through kind of UI improvements and recommendation engines, also pretty highly strongly. And again, those technical features, I think maybe our survey respondents don't give them much consideration. It probably doesn't give them a fair consideration. Maybe they're regarded as weaker from their point of view. We asked about FAST for pay TV, because again, like free TV, we've seen FAST increase their activities. Initially, kind of some of them had their sort of FAST and AVOD service apps on their set-top box. Now they're adding FAST channels to the UPG. Almost half, kind of 46%, think that more operators this year will integrate FAST channels. 26% thinks they'll integrate kind of FAST apps before they fully integrate channels into the UPG. And about 28%, a bit more negative on the issue, feeling FAST will either remain separate or be very limited. And I guess, Jed, you're there tracking the channels the whole time and seeing things. Do you think we're going to see more pay TV activity this year?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think as you said, with the free TV space, it's similar in the way that it's sort of a natural extension of their service already. I mean, you know, there's definitely more activity, and as the sort of similar opportunities present themselves. I think it was I think we saw Virgin at some event recently saying that they were going to increase their FAST channels to something around 50. So I think that's just sort of indicative of the sort of the investment and sort of opportunities that are sort of presenting themselves there. So I think that shows some pretty significant intention. And so, yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely a trend.
I think it's going to be interesting. I think the interesting element of debate that doesn't come up with paid to be fast, people don't raise the issue that it's a sort of it's a fairly attractive business model for pay TV operators to add fast. They've obviously been deleting linear channels they've been paying for the last few years. So bringing on these ones is not a tough decision if they can find it fit. But move on to the sort of last general subject. Talk about the studios. The first area we'll talk about is movie windowing. 2023 kind of, I guess, saw somewhat of a return to the blockbuster releases. Theatres have had a really tough time following COVID and thanks to Barbenheimer, maybe they're back. But we're also seeing the studios evolve their releasing strategy, sort of coming back to working their way through windows and which obviously they kind of, some of them kind of stepped out of, went either straight to SVOD with all titles or some titles, but and not just coming back and coming working through the windows, but actually kind of here just using Warner to illustrate that in the US, using kind of coming back to these co-exclusive models. So Warner have come back here in the US, kind of they've got a window of about 6 months for their titles on Max. And then they go to the second window where sharing the window in a co-exclusive way with streamers. At the moment, they're not got a fixed output deal with one winner. They've been going to different streamers, but you can see, and we'll see more innovative different models like this. I mean, the other one that's even kind of even more complex, and this is actually a mashup of some of the issues we've discussed today, because this is sort of movie windowing plus kind of hybrid SVOD bundling. Kind of Paramount Sky deal has been in place for coming up to 2 years now. Paramount Plus is bundled within Sky Cinema. They also share content, so some titles are timed exactly the same. They're on Sky's channels and Paramount Plus. Some are switching in terms of who goes first, Paramount Plus getting a lead with some, Sky with others. And more recently, kind of, we've seen some changes to the window. So it used to be quite simple. It would go on Sky, then it would go on Netflix, and then it'd go on Channel 4. It would work through those windows over time. Interestingly, last weekend, you can see Top Gun Maverick kind of went to Paramount Plus first. They had a lead on Sky, and then kind of a year later, you'd expect it to come on the next kind of window. But actually, Channel 4 and Netflix have both premiered Top Gun Maverick last weekend, so they're sharing that window, and it's going to be really interesting to kind of follow that. And we've asked kind of respondents about that, and almost 80% agreed that whilst they'll be shorter, the windowing patterns will return. 83% felt that premium VOD will be available, so that's kind of higher priced kind of rental retail models that will be available. Itself kind of interesting because we've seen activity there, but not across the board. Not everybody has been doing that. 54% agreed that kind of DTC studios would premiere on their own services for a short exclusive period before going co-exclusive. So just like that Max model we just showed you. And there's a kind of not entire agreement about everything, certainly not the kind of that we'll see kind of simultaneous releasing with theatres happening again, which is what we did see. But I guess, Toby, I think it's clear there's going to be some kind of return to that whole windowing system that goes through every one of them.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think a lot of studios and other players have realized that, you know, some of this skipping windows is just, kind of resulting in reduced overall revenue. So I think pretty much everybody's going to be going back to a windowing system where you're managing each window to try and, you know, maximize revenue in each kind of element of the release cycle. I mean, I think the thing we are going to see are probably more windows. We're going to see shorter windows that are, you know, kind of quicker. And also, you know, the whole situation is becoming more complex. I think we're going to see more co-exclusivity also.
Yeah, I mean, we as well as movie windowing, we then went on to talk to them about just general monetization. I mean, obviously a key characteristic of the year was kind of studios returning to selling content after a period of kind of D2C focus where they were pipeline content to themselves. I kind of will be tracking this year. I mean, it's too early really to put this number up here on the left, but obviously there was consistent kind of, there was a clear jump and bit of consistent growth in terms of how many premieres they kept to their own service in the first window in global markets. It's not gone as quick as people expected. And then obviously now with the kind of slight reversals in strategy or refinement in strategy, we'll see what happens. At the moment, it's way too early to see what that number is, but I'm willing to kind of gamble that number is going to kind of stay lower for 2024, because they're clearly out there doing more with their content. It does vary greatly by market, as that shows on the right. And I think you can see, actually, it's the easiest way to look at it is when you actually look at kind of recent premieres. And this is sort of, we pulled these off Show Tracker over the last few months of premieres. This is premieres either in the first window or second window that basically defy vertical integration. They go to a service that isn't owned by the studio in a market where they do have a service. And you can just see, you can just pick out examples. I mean, it's really interesting to see that kind of House of the Dragons has already gone on to join ProSieben's digital service in Germany. You can see kind of certain network shows from the studios going to different clients. You can see actually Disney kind of just starting to get a bit more involved. The Dropout, which is sort of reasonably big show they had on Disney Plus, a show that was on Hulu, and I think it's an FX show. I might be wrong about that, but it was certainly on Hulu. On BBC One and iPlayer now, both as a box set and on linear. So you can see more activity in different ways, sometimes second window, sometimes first. And we asked respondents about that, and they're probably kind of pretty much agree. 82% agree that kind of, yes, kind of they need to improve the set of rights for the second window. That's certainly an issue that came up with us during the year. People say, that people are interested in the second windows, but needing to get some form of box set right if they're a free TV operator, just like the BBC with the Dropout. 81% said they need to sell more content to third parties after using it. 67% believe that kind of they'll sell more to third parties rather than premiere on their own. So it's a whole mixed bag. And only 28% said that they would limit it to non-core content, which is what was sort of happening at the beginning of the year. So I think that's quite interesting. I think we should look at questions. I know we're coming close to time. I mean, just as wrap up, kind of I did used to say it was an unprecedented year, which I think is a really kind of not a great thing to say, because it's just more rapid evolution in our kind of media and entertainment sector. It's been an industry that always evolves, so it's just faster really, but lots of impacts. 7 years of the survey kind of tweaking each year to reflect changes, but this year macroeconomic conditions, financial pressures kind of clearly shine through. Everyone's needed to save money, kind of including consumers. Consistent theme and linked to kind of back to those ad market pressures in linear, kind of maybe behind some of the speeding up of the digital activity by broadcasters, was in COVID true, but even more now. Pay TV continues to be set on kind of winning that role of aggregator, moving even further in terms of bundling SVODs and even in terms of now adding AVOD Fast maybe. But AVOD and Fast, it kind of seen great growth in the US, stakeholders trying to work out how to grow ex-US. But we'll be back next year with even more questions. But as Toby said, kind of we'll talk. We're happy to talk more about it. But just on the questions, I mean, we had kind of, can Fast succeed in other global markets like it's done in the US? Kind of that's a question a lot of people are asking. I don't think it can succeed in the same scale as the US, because the US has some very unique characteristics that are different for elsewhere. But I think that the kind of the digital kind of streamed linear market and non-linear market is going to continue to grow at rapid pace. And that means kind of Fast, however that may be, whatever that name may mean and how it may change when you look at kind of what kind of current traditional channels are doing with kind of linear activity. I think there's plenty of masses of opportunity for growth. It's just not quite going to grow in the same way.
So thanks for listening to our deep dive into our TV trends report. If you'd like to get yourself a copy of the report, which has all the data you need to get an overview of the current TV market, then head to our website, threevision.tv, or click the link in the show notes. Don't forget to subscribe to our insights as well if you want to stay in the loop with the key developments.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Inside Content, the TV industry podcast brought to you by Three Vision. With decades of TV industry experience and real-world success, we know the ins and outs of the market like nobody else. To learn more about our TV consultancy services, head to threevision.tv.